Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Tuned in to the 21st episode of 2018 here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. This is Radio Free Redoubt. Welcome to 1821, episode 1821, where we are hopefully going to inform you and inspire you, motivate you to action, and more than anything, gather the patriots as a voice of encouragement outside the wire to those in occupied territory. And of course, our fellow patriots that are in the free zones, congratulations, you made it. Now, I know many of you are trying to make your way to those deeply conservative areas, strategically relocating your family and your businesses. Now, while you still have time and take advantage of this precious borrowed time that we have, we've got a guest coming up that I've been warning you about. No, I was telling you guys last week, we're looking very much forward to having James Rawls, the author and the founder of SurvivalBlog.com, an influence for many of us for many years. So we're going to have him on the line here coming up in just a few moments. There's obviously some things that I want to go over with you before and after we have him on in segments 2 and 3. In segment 4, we're going to talk a little bit about some communications, a couple of really great articles that I came across. One I started to read to you last week about Radio Free Europe and Liberty Radio. And then something else that I came across, I was actually sent to me by an Amron operator, thank you very much, about agent radio operators, special agent radio operators that these are released for the public now. And in segment 1 here, we are going to cover the news and commentary. We've got a few stories that I want to cover with you, and then give you some ideas for Father's Day. Father's Day is coming up, so I want to give you guys some ideas for that very hard to find father in your life. Well, hopefully we'll be able to help you out here, and you can help Radio Free Readout out at the same time. Okay. The news is brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series. Get them all. 10 books are out, including audio. Go to 299days.com to learn more. From the Daily Mail out of the UK, Austria, they now have, as we've covered recently, they have a government that has swung, while the people have elected those which have swung the government to the right sharply. Well, now they're planning to shut down mosques. So all this multiculturalism, blow the borders wide open and allow all the refugees coming in. They realize a little late that was a bad idea. But Chancellor Kurz is quoted as saying, political Islam's parallel societies and radicalizing tendencies have no place in our country. Vice Chancellor Heinz Christian Strache says, this is just the beginning, and if these measures aren't enough, we will, if necessary, evaluate the legal situation here or there. So in other words, they're saying they're going to begin shutting down these mosques that are teaching radicalization. They're not going to put up with it. Now, listen to this, how refreshing this is. Of course, like Europeans, they usually learn their lessons a little too late, but we are no better off. We, as a nation, the United States, especially as sharply divided as we are and how hard the left is going to try to place a very much socialist, communist, globalist, statist aligned group of They are definitely not statesmen. Politicians in place at this, the midterm elections coming up and the next presidential election. They are working diligently. But how refreshing is it to hear any world leader say political Islam's parallel societies and radicalizing tendencies have no place in our country? Hallelujah. Oh, I mean, Hungary's been saying this, but they, of course, you know, they would love to just ostracize Hungary. But that's some positive news. Some positive news that somebody's waking up. We'll see. We'll follow that one. We'll continue to follow that one. There is, out of One News Now, kind of along these lines, the U.S. population drop or an impending crisis. This is the question that they're asking with the headline. Is the U.S. population drop, which there is one, is that an impending crisis? Out of One News Now, the birth rate in the United States is continuing to drop, a trend that one population analyst warns could lead to an unstable future. We've talked about this and the necessary birth rates to sustain a people, a culture. And when that declines, you are in danger, and you get to a certain point, your birth rate drops to a certain point and it's not recoverable. Your children or your children's children will be owned by someone at some point. And this is why we say, breed, patriots. That's your mission. Young patriots, breed like there's no tomorrow. A government report shows that births among young women, as well as women in their 30s, have declined once again, resulting in the fewest number of babies being born in 3 decades. It's the age of selfishness. It's all about me, my career. Jonathan Abamonte of the Population Research Institute points to one factor that is currently helping to prop up the birth rate in America. Listen to this. This is exactly what they said, but just what, 5 years ago in Europe, they were saying the same thing. Europe is in decline. It's some of these countries are at irretrievable birth rates, non-recoverable birth rates. However, there's a silver lining for most of those European countries. It's actually saving them. That's going to probably help reverse their population decline. And now they're saying the same thing of America. There is one factor that is currently helping to prop up the birth rate in America. He says we still have a robust migration into this country. So they're helping keep our population afloat and stable, keeping our working age population stable enough that we don't have to worry too much. He says we might not have to worry about if you're just only concerned about sheer numbers, but it's not just about the quality. What is more detrimental is, or it's not about the quantity, it's the quality. And we, of course, this nation was built by folks who migrated here from Europe initially, and then many other places around the world that has led to the growth of America to become the United States of America that it is today. However, those migrants were a completely different mindset than the migrants that we have today. They are flying flags from their foreign nations. They're trampling on American flags. They're demanding rights that the Constitution doesn't guarantee them. Those who are here illegally are demanding constitutional rights. And that's a problem. So to say our migration numbers are keeping those numbers afloat, so we don't have too much to worry about. The exact opposite is true, in my estimation, because the migrants that are coming here, especially the illegal ones, are interested in assimilating and becoming Americans. So we've got some very serious issues that our children and their children are going to have to confront. Some of us will see that in our lifetimes, as we're already seeing some of that, but not to full maturity. He says this influx of newcomers to the U.S. is curbing the problem, at least for now. Immigrants, legal or otherwise, provide 25% of the total new births each year. Another factor is shifting attitudes about motherhood. Women, whether for the sake of their careers or not, are waiting to have children, and then they have fewer children. We talked about this in the past on Radio Free Redoubt, is the detriment to your nation and your culture for preserving your culture. And if you can go to YouTube, just do a search, European population decline, and see one report after another, one corroborating another, about the dangers of allowing your birth rate to decline to a certain point. But there's one in particular that we focused on a couple of times just because of the increased Islamization, radicalization, essentially al-Hijra, the cultural jihad that's taking place in Europe. In letting them be the canary in the coal mine, the bellwether, to let us know when a idea is something worth pursuing or abandoning. And we can see by their experience, this experiment of mass immigration of those from Islamic countries is not working out well, because, well, it's part of the Islamic strategy is to overcome countries, take them over, dominate them, invade them through a cultural jihad without a shot being fired initially. But if you go to YouTube and type in the Islamization of the nations, Europe today, North America tomorrow, Islam is not a religion of peace. It's a warning from statesmen, people in Europe that are reporting on the actual factual results and consequences of these experimental policies of bringing mass immigration in the form of many of them refugees from Islamic nations. It's blowing up in their face. I think we should learn from that. From Todd Starnes, parents fight schools' pornographic sex ed lessons. We see these stories over and over. San Diego parents are disgusted over what they're calling pornographic lessons that are part of the school district's new state-mandated sex education program. The curriculum teaches sixth graders about sexual pleasure and promotes sexual experimentation. So the parents are saying the materials that they're teaching are graphic, pornographic, and go well beyond the law. Well, of course, you give that group an inch, they're going to take a mile. So what did you expect? If you're in occupied territory, you are in occupied territory. But unlike those poor Europeans who are living under communism behind the Iron Curtain and they were trapped, not allowed to leave, you have the free will to leave. So you live in occupied territory and then you act shocked when your children are confronted with some, you're living in Sodom or you're living in Gomorrah, and then you want to act shocked and outraged when citizens or the leaders, the culture from Sodom and Gomorrah are acting like, well, predictably. Get out of occupied territory. If you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, do everything within your power, to A, get out of occupied territory, the People's Democratic Republic of California. If you cannot, then homeschool. Amazingly enough, the People's Democratic still is very friendly toward homeschooling, very accommodating toward homeschooling. So it's either private Christian school or homeschool until you can get out of occupied territory. I know many of you are working on it. You're various different stages of that strategic move to get out of there. But it's not going to get better. These are not shocking headlines any longer, sadly. And then finally, before we take a break and come back in segment two with our guest, the last story here. We celebrated this. I remember Monday morning this week, we heard about the Supreme Court's decision on Jack Phillips. He was the baker in Colorado. The Supreme Court makes a ruling 7-2 in favor of the Colorado baker. So we said, yay for religious liberty, but brakes, put the brakes on. I talked to two constitutional lawyers, attorneys, Patriots this week. I've been corresponding with Chris Ann Hall and corresponding with Representative Matt Shea, both of them constitutional attorneys. And both of them are saying the way this language is written is nothing for us to celebrate. It's smoke and mirrors. Because the weasel words that the Supreme Court used, it will not necessarily open the gates for victories with the other businesses that we've seen rulings against and charges brought against under these so-called hate, equality, whatever laws. Because the way it's written, they're saying the way they ruled is that the law was applied improperly. So they didn't say that this equality law was wrong. What they said was it was improperly applied. So it sounds like religious liberty, and one of them started to squeak it out of the corner of his mouth in his dissension letter, but they still left it open for future. They just did not directly address the religious liberty argument as a whole body of the Supreme Court. So we're going to also watch this one very carefully, but it was a weasel worded victory for us. We'll take it. We'll take it. This is great for Jack Phillips. Praise the Lord. But that battle was won. We still have a massive war ahead of us, multiple campaigns ahead of us in the fight for religious liberty. Okay. Let's see. What do I want to cut? Oh, by the way, tonight, speaking of that, Chris Ann would be the best person to put that that explanation out there for you. I have not gotten a chance to listen to her podcast addressing that issue, but I have it downloaded. I have it linked for you, which will be put in the highlights and resources posting for you to go and listen to later at your leisure. And also, I'm going to, for those of you who are live listeners tonight, the live streaming, I'm going to stream that right after this show, right after episode 1821, Radio Free Redoubt, instead of our old-time radio show, instead of the old-time radio show, the spy, it is, I'm drawing a blank. Drawing a blank on the old world, old time radio spy agent, secret agent. Anyway, well, we normally play an old time radio segment from some type of, spy type of espionage, secret special agent type of old time radio episode. Tonight we're going to play this episode and I'll read the description. What did the Supreme Court really say about baking cakes? What do the courts say about your right to video public officials? What does your government say? What about presidential tariffs and sanctuary cities? The answers to the questions and many more can only be truthfully found when we put aside the dictated narrative and mainstream rhetoric. Today we deal with these issues from their real constitutional and lawful foundations, the only way they should be addressed. So that's this episode from the 9th. And we're going to get that. We're going to play that tonight. So she's going to be talking about, this is what she said when she was when I was corresponding with her, that she's working on the podcast as we were corresponding, addressing that cake baking decision by the Supreme Court. So that'll be coming up. Okay. A couple great resources I want to pass on to you. Very, very cool resources. And thank you to the listeners who passed this on. One's called teachingamericanhistory.org. And particularly, there's one that has titled 50 Docs, 50 Documents about our founding, the founding of our nation. But this Teaching American History has all of these documents, stories about the beginning of our history and the founding of our nation, with documents and also homeschool curriculum. They have a whole series of homeschool curriculum. It's not just for kids that are going through school, not just for homeschoolers, it's for you adults as well. It's for all of us. It's just another resource. Besides, of course, we're strong proponents of wall builders, second to none. And, of course, Chrisanne Hall and all of her resources. But this is another one, Teaching American History. Lots of these documents in PDF, speeches by our founding fathers and so on that you can download and just build up your electronic library by going to teachingamericanhistory.org. And then finally, another listener sent in this one, Accurate Targets. It's at accurateshooter.com. And they are a whole series of printable PDF, printable shooting skills targets for you to take out. They've got silhouettes, little animal silhouettes. They've got sighting in targets, all kinds of targets that, you know, some have their games, tic-tac-toe, all kinds of just really interesting and fun ways for you to get out to the range and kind of mix things up a little bit. And they're free. They're available at accurateshooter.com. They're shooting skills targets. So we'll put that link in the highlights and resources posting. Check that in the next 24 to 48 hours. We'll be updating that as well. Now, Father's Day is coming up. Father's Day ideas. Well, of course, you guys know I carry a Phil Rose knife. It was given to me by Phil Rose from Phil Rose Knives, and they are absolutely world-class, hands down, top-of-the-line tool. It is a tool. I love this thing. I carry it with me regularly. I've used it, I don't know how many times, just endless, countless times. It has just been the tool that I needed for the job. Extremely rugged, well-built, but check it out for yourself at prosknives.com. That's prosknives.com. That's also a linkable banner on our website, and that'll be in the highlights and resources posting. So, there's some ideas here for Father's Day. Besides that, maybe you already have a Phil Rose knife. Maybe you've got a bazillion knives. You're going to look for something different for your dad. Well, there are a couple of radios that I've been looking at very closely and reading the reviews, and they're getting great reviews. A lot of bang for your buck. One's the Baofeng Tech Tri-Band and a Baofeng Tech Dual Band. So let me just pull these up. They are the UV 25X4 and the UV 25X2. One's 25 watt radios. And one's a tri-band and one's a dual band. And they're running about, I couldn't believe the price on these, $115 for a mobile radio, 25 watts. And it was like $125. Yeah, $128.86 for the tri-band. That's a lot of radio. That is a lot of radio for that price. So that might be something you might be interested in. Also, I personally carry the Leatherman OHT, the Coyote Tan. You've seen it in the videos where I've used it. The Leatherman OHT is a one-hand opening Leatherman tool, which is extremely helpful for those of you who've been trying to hold something with one hand and get your Leatherman out with the other. It's a one-hand opening tool, spring-loaded pliers. It's really cool. So I'm going to recommend that. We'll put a link on to that one. And also the two Bibles that I strongly recommend, the Founder's Bible by Wall Builders, which I'm so excited about and I'm going to talk about next week, and the Patriot's Bible by Lee. Those two things, well, all of those things that I just mentioned are going to be listed there. But the Patriot's Bible and the Founder's Bible both have tons of history woven all through that Bible. And it's placed very appropriately in different portions of the Bible where a certain scripture influenced some type of principle that our country was founded on, or something that went into our Constitution, or something that inspired a speech by one of our founding fathers, one of our patriot leaders. And it's just amazing, continuing evidence of the Christian influences and the biblical influences that are contained in the founding of our nation. Just very, very cool stuff. And I can't recommend it highly enough. So we'll put links in there for both of those. So there's some ideas for you for Father's Day. How's that sound? Hopefully that helps you out a little bit. Okay, when we come back, we are going to have James Wesley Rawls on. So we're looking forward to it. Stick around. This is Radio Free Redoubt.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. The 51st state, Liberty State. There are a lot of myths going around, and one of them is that it's not popular. Born of ignorance, and only a bunch of hicks support the move to split a state. Well, that's funny, because polls with over 10,000 responses, including KXLY, not known as a bastion of conservatism, showed an average of 74% in support. Crosscut, a socialist-leaning publication, said the movement is born of ignorance. They claim that us hicks actually do share the same values, culture, traditions, and heritage as downtown Seattle. Really? We believe the Constitution means what it says, and the Bible is the Word of God. We believe in the sanctity of life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. Time and again, Seattle has rejected and repudiated those ideas. The truth is, we are already two states, and the fact they have to ridicule such a popular idea proves it. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea Republic.
Hardly a shot was fired. With ruthless propaganda and clever political intrigue, the Soviets captured control of five free governments and sealed off 70 million people behind an iron curtain.
Welcome back. Segment two. Segment two here at Radio Free Redoubt, which is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. Our Patriot friends up there in the northern part of the panhandle of North Idaho, helping Patriots just like you get strategically relocated to the heart of the American Redoubt. And if you've got your eyes set on that Boundary County, Bonner County portion of North Idaho, then give them a call tomorrow morning. But you can check out their website tonight, www.selkirkmountainrealestate.com. All right. Just this past week, on June 5th, we celebrated our seven-year anniversary of Radio Free Redoubt. Over 474 episodes now, and 1.4 million downloads later, we're proud to be playing a small part in a significant modern migration movement of conservative, patriot-minded citizens that are strategically relocating to what they consider safe havens, particularly the American Redoubt. That's Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Eastern Oregon, and Eastern Washington. And all of this was inspired by a passionate piece that was penned by one of the foremost subject matter experts on emergency preparedness, the founder of a wildly popular preparedness website, survivalblog.com. He's the author of multiple fiction and nonfiction writings, former U.S. Army military intelligence officer, and his accomplishments just go on and on. And you all, most of all of you know him, and we're talking about James Wesley Rawls. Thank you for being with us on Radio Free Redoubt, sir.
Thanks for having me on, John.
Well, you are the one who inspired all of this. This is what kindled the flame inside of me, and it just became a passion, which became my life, that something I never knew. Well, I probably would not have done this if I knew what I was getting myself into. But it's been an amazing journey ever since. And so you have really been, you and of course Survival Blog have been the cornerstone of that we've just built all of this on, until Radio Free Redoubt kind of took on a life of its own. Now we have Redoubt News they're doing a wonderful job bringing stories that you just won't find anywhere else. And so this is growing. So I wanted to talk to you about, I guess, from your vantage point, watching the American Redoubt go from inception concept to actually becoming actionable, something that's actually becoming tangible, you might even say. I wanted to get your – I know you get a lot of correspondence as well, and people that are interested in the American Redoubt. So I wanted to get your take. What's your assessment of where we've gone in the last 7 years as the American Redoubt movement?
Well, John, I think that the Redoubt movement has definitely been a success. It's definitely growing. And if you look at the demographic goals of the American Redoubt, those goals are being met. We're well on track to making all of the Redoubt states, or at least the eastern half of Oregon and the eastern half of Washington much more conservative. And I think that in another 7 years, when we look back, we'll say, wow, we're making great progress, great strides. Because I think that within 7 years, we will probably see eastern Washington formally partitioned from western Washington, and possibly eastern Oregon partitioned from western Oregon.
Mm.
I think that's a realistic goal. And in a seven-year time frame, I think that really could happen. And certainly, we've already seen, especially in Idaho, a solidification of conservative, liberty-loving politics within the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at what's gone on in the Republican Central Committees,
yes,
at the precinct level on up, conservative politics have definitely come to dominate politics in Idaho. I think the chances of any backsliding, even if we see some backsliding at the national level with the upcoming midterm elections, I don't think we're going to see any change other than positive change in certainly Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana.
Right.
And our only real hope for change in Oregon and Washington, I think, will be partition. And if you look at the other movements that are gaining steam in the United States for the partition of California, the Jefferson State movement, and so on, I do believe that the wave of partition will probably begin with Liberty State in eastern Washington.
Yeah.
So all in all, I've been very happy with what's happened with the readout movement. I'm really glad to see that it has not been co-opted by anyone who's a racist or an anti-Semite or mm-hmm. anyone who stepped up to say, I am the leader of the American readout. You know, when you come right down to it, the American readout is a philosophy.
Yes.
It's not a political party. And it is not something that any one person can take credit for. Right. I certainly don't. I just gave a name to what was already taking place.
Sure, sure.
And I'm very happy to see what's happened with the readout movement, and I'm enthusiastic and very much looking forward to continuing progress. I think that we're well on our way. And again, in another 7 years, I think we're going to look back with pride and say, yeah, we did that. We got a group of people together, we inspired people, and we just let the demographic tide come in.
Yeah. Well, and that's been the whole strategy, as well as, you know, strengthening the demographics. Of course, we see on a strategic level, we see statist globalists really that are also using demographics as a weapon to, I would say, subvert the United States, our laws, our constitution, our borders. And so they do not like it. This was the first time the Southern Poverty Law Center did a hit piece on me. I kind of got my feelings hurt a little bit, how they could say those mean things about me, because I'm really a nice guy. But then I reminded myself of what we're up against, you know, and communist propagandists, if you will.
Well, so, if you're not making enemies with the left, you're not making progress.
Right, exactly. And I was reminded quickly by somebody that if you're not taking flack, you're not over the target. So, or if you are taking flack, that means you're over the target. So, it's really exciting to be a part of something that's really taking effect. I know that Idaho now is the fastest growing state in the nation. Right. Kootenai County and Bonner County, the panhandle, which is another thing that we're seeing too. We talk about the separation. We'll talk about Liberty State here probably in the next segment, but there's also I'm seeing a noticeable divide between the north and the south parts of Idaho as
yes.
well.
There's that's been apparent for a very long time.
Yeah.
And the psychological breaking or psychological borderline between the two, I think, is actually fairly close to the time zone line.
Yes.
You know, Idaho is kind of unique in that it's not only politically two different states, It's even in two different time zones.
Yes.
And if you look at the economic history of Idaho, since the very beginning, southern Idaho has been economically tied to Utah, and
yes,
northern Idaho has always been economically tied to eastern Washington.
Yes.
They're in two different time zones. They're in two different climates. They're religiously, there's obviously a very sharp divide between the LDS-dominated south and the non-LDS north.
Right.
So I think there could be a opportunity for a partition. And please, folks, don't look at partition as just divisive for the sake of divisiveness.
Right.
It actually has some huge advantages, not the least of which is gaining two U.S. senators.
Right. Right.
In each of those new states that will be formed. Two conservative senators to help push the tide back against, you know, ever since we switched in this country to direct election of senators, which was a huge mistake.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate was supposed to represent the states. Now it's just another Congress. And in fact, when I was growing up, the Senate was more conservative than the House. Now it's just the opposite.
Yes.
And with 6-year terms, some of these old crones will be in there for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a scary thought to think about. But there, you know, there's a lot of there are a lot of folks out there that see what's going on in the world. They want to make a strategic move to the American redoubt.
Yes.
And then Trump gets elected. Now everything's fine. Everything's good. And we've seen a drop off in listenership. The AMRON member, AMRON has just been just an amazing group of people anyway. But we have seen a dip in the membership. People are not as concerned. So
that's true across the board, because I talk a lot with my advertisers, a lot of whom are in either the firearms business or the food storage business. And particularly in the food storage business, for people packaging long-term storage food, they've definitely seen a dip. I think that the American populace breathed a sigh of relief when Donald Trump was elected.
Yes.
But that sigh was a little too loud, a little too deep, and a little too long. I think people are taking too much for granted. The threats are still out there. We're still on any given day, we're at the brink of nuclear war. There's more nuclear armed nations than there ever have been. The U.S. debt keeps getting larger and larger. The globalist forces are unfortunately gaining strength around the world, and the threats are larger than they've ever been. This is not the time to just breathe a sigh of relief and turn on the big screen TV.
Right.
Or warm up the jet ski.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. And this is something I've been saying. This is, you know, I admittedly, I breathed a huge sigh of relief, not so much that Trump became president, but that Hillary did not. And
right.
I really believe that it was a blessing from the Lord that we did not deserve. And that is that from a Christian perspective, you know, like I mentioned, I mention often, he's a loving God, but he's also a just God. And we cannot say that we are not deserving of his judgment. And so I believe that this was a temporary reprieve that we're to make use of.
I look at it as a stay of execution.
Yes. Yes. Good way of putting it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think that we will look back on the Trump administration and say, wow, that was our big opportunity to hunker down, stock up, team up, and train up.
Yeah. Well, especially now that we see let me know if you see the same thing. I saw everybody let off the gas pedal, kind of go into the slumber, but I also see kind of a reawakening now. And I think that one of the things that's helped that is the people are – cannot deny the level of hatred, the vitriol that is present among the left, or the anti-American group, if you will, the socialist, communist, statist, globalist, and they are becoming just increasingly hostile, and they're openly talking of hostility and even carrying that out. So I think that people are starting to – I was surprised this week to see the FBI numbers. For the second month in a row, we're at near record-level gun sales and background checks again. So
– yes. So, people are waking up. There's definitely a realization that the divide between the red states and the blue states is stronger than it's ever been since the Civil War, basically. And the amount of vitriol, you're right, is just off the charts. I think that Antifa is going to become increasingly radicalized and going to move from the realm of political rhetoric to terrorist action. Mm. I think that's going to take place. If you look at the history of the 1960s, I think that is a pretty good parallel. And if you look at the radicalization of the anti-war protesters,
yeah,
it's just a matter of time before some very hot-headed individuals gain control of individual Antifa cells, fully radicalize them, and push them all the way to the point of assassination, bank robberies, looting gun stores, whatever they're going to do.
Kind of weather underground, Symbionese Liberation Army type
exactly.
of...
Yeah. That's same mentality, I think, is almost inevitable for Antifa because it's one of those mentalities that kind of metastasizes. It feeds on itself, and there is a divide between the ultra-radical and the merely radical.
Right.
And the ultra-radicals are going to start building bombs. I think it's going to happen. And as I pointed out in a Survival Blog article, this time around, it's not just going to be physical bombs. It's also going to be e-bombs. It'll be cyber warfare. It'll be chemical, biological warfare, possibly the use of radiological weapons in dirty bombs, probably not a fission device.
Right.
But subcritical, certainly. Subcritical use of fissile materials as dirty bombs. I wouldn't put that past them at all.
I know the
as they develop more and more hatred of anyone on the right, it almost becomes an inevitability. And certainly if Trump stays in office and if he gets reelected, I think the left is going to go absolutely nuts.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And the rhetoric on the left is pushing and calling for more and more violence. And what's interesting about that type of asymmetrical, low-intensity conflict is that there's no front lines to face the communists on. And what you have is this domestic homeland security apparatus trying to get that chaos under control. So their measures are going to be wide sweeping. So basically – everybody has to give up their guns. I mean, it affects everyone. They won't just target the leftist groups and go after them and treat them like Taliban or ISIS.
No, they're going to say anyone with a gun is the enemy.
Yes.
Even though the people who are misusing them will almost entirely be on the left. And they'll call it'll be like this new form of political correctness where almost like the way the TSA pats down grandmothers and little infants.
Yes.
Right? It'll be analogous to that because they're going to say, oh, we have a new terrorism problem in America, and the problem is going to be extremism. They're not going to refer to it as left-wing.
Exactly.
Even though they're the ones throwing the bombs, they're going to just say – they use the blanket term of extremism, and they're going to clamp down on the civil liberties of everyone.
Yes. We all stand to
– a frightening prospect.
It is, and I'm not so certain that's not by design from much higher power.
It goes back to the Hegelian dialectic.
Precisely, yeah, exactly. Oh, this is really good stuff, and of course that would bring in the third element. So you've got, and already what we see is the violence, the political violence being carried out, is overwhelmingly left wing violence. The active shooters we find are registered Democrats or they're activists on the left. Or after the dust settles from the initial event, we find out that these are left-wing individuals. and, you know, many of them on psychotropic drugs and other influences. But the typically you do not see right-wing, conservative, Christian, patriot, militia-type guys carrying out these types of attacks and active shooter incidents. Although there have been a handful of the, you know,
sure, there have, like Dylann Roof, for example. But, yeah, you know, he's in the minority.
Exactly. Very much.
Most of them are of the Klebold and Harris camp, where they're, you know, left-wingers, big time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So when that third element comes in, you wrote a piece that has been hugely popular. It's just gone viral all over the place. I've seen it posted and reposted, I think. Well, I know we did as well. But on the 15th of last month, you posted The Mathematics of Countering Tyranny. And it really breaks down. It really took me. I mentioned this last week. It really took me to, and I know this is a mind mental exercise about what if, you know, just running sheer numbers objectively, the cost of that to our government should they desire to try to disarm the people across the board. And that really brought me back to that Solzhenitsyn and the Gulag Archipelago, where I think there's enough people that would not stand by. I think that there would be a very high cost to that. That could completely change our country irreversibly, you know, for the next – I think that we would just not know the America after that we
yeah,
see it, now.
Even if it were a three-week-long civil war, it would still be a civil war.
Yes.
And it would still be a very sharp memory in American history.
Oh, yeah, and costly. And
incredibly costly in a very short period of time.
Yes,
I don't think those on the left who have the dream of disarming us have really thought this through, and that's one of the reasons I published that.
Yeah, it is. It's hopefully will cause some to give pause. Of course, I'm not so certain that there are certain elements out there that have thought about that, and that's precisely what they're hoping for. Open up the justification for all kinds of measures that they've been wringing their hands over. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, we want to strengthen this region so that we can hopefully politically, culturally, socially survive that type of an episode intact, or with as much of our heritage and our values intact that we can restore that even regionally, if only regionally on the other side of that. So we'll talk about that right after the break. And I'd love to talk to you about Liberty State, the movement to break Eastern Washington off away from their oppressors on the west side. So if you wouldn't mind sticking around, this is Radio Free Redoubt. We're with James Wesley Rawls from Survival Blog, and the one who sparked the American Redoubt movement and the mission that has become Radio Free Redoubt because of his inspiration. More from James Wesley Rawls and John Jacob Schmidt when we come back. Stay right there.
Podcasts are equal.
There is no retreat but in submission and slavery. Our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard on the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable. And let it come! I repeat it, sir. Let it come! It is in vain, sir, to extenuate the matter. Gentlemen may cry, peace! Peace, but there is no peace. The war is actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it that gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death!
The This is segment 3 of episode 1821 here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. And segment 3 is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design. Designs to help keep you safe and to help you thrive. If you are trying to plan your property strategically with water access, food supply, energy production, and security features built into your land, you need some help with that. That's what they do. Strategic Landscape Design also offers services to help you scope out the property that you're considering buying. There might be some things that you need to you may not have considered looking at, or things you may have overlooked. You just want some help with that. So you can plan ahead. You can certainly do that as well. StrategicLandscapeDesign.com. Okay, now if you are just joining us late, we are here with James Wesley Rawls from Survival Blog. We've been talking about the American Redoubt, the status of that, kind of talking about the overall socio-political landscape in America today. And if you didn't get a chance to, or if you get a chance to, please go back and listen to that. But something else has come up on the radar in the American Redoubt that's has very much strategic significance, that's in line with the American Redoubt movement, or the American Redoubt strategy. And that is this movement to form a 51st state, Liberty State. So we want to talk about that. Thanks for being with us, James.
Thanks again for having me on.
This Liberty State movement, you're tracking this very closely, as I understand it.
Yes, I am. I'm very enthusiastic about it. And I think that of all of the state partition movements that have come and gone over the years, I think this one's going to come and live itself out to fruition. At this point, as we discussed previously, I believe that it is now inevitable that Eastern Washington will successfully partition from Western Washington. The demographic differences, the social, political, economic, religious, you name it, differences between East and West of the Cascades are now so stark that there's essentially nothing that Eastern Washingtonians have in common with those west of the Cascades. So I do believe that it is going to happen. It's not a matter of if, but when.
The most recent movements we've seen just a few years ago with Northern Colorado, the Northern, I can't remember, 12 counties, six, seven, I can't remember how many. The counties in Northern Colorado, they failed. We see the movement going on right now, which is building a lot of momentum, but probably quite a few more challenges in the state of Jefferson, the southern Oregon, Northern California, and of course the other California efforts to break up that state. Why do you think, and maybe you already answered this with what you went into, you know, the stark differences, but what do you think sets this Liberty State movement apart from the others that would make it appear to be so much more likely to succeed?
Well, part of it is economic, in that whenever a group of counties seeks to partition itself from an existing state, it's essentially a mother may I situation.
Yes.
And the main stumbling block to a partition is normally economic. But in the case of Liberty State, where in the eyes of the state legislature, Eastern Washington is seen as an economic drain on the state of Washington as it's currently configured, I don't think that there's going to be too much resistance on their part if the folks in the counties east of the Cascades in Washington seek independence. If they want to become the new 51st state, I think that the folks in the legislature will let it happen. And at this point, the only real stumbling block is just the loss of face on the part of the state governor and the state legislature of Washington. I think they might see it as not looking too politically palatable,
right?
Because they don't want to lose face. But economically, there really is no stumbling block. It's actually in their best interest to see Eastern Washington detached.
Yeah, and I think that's the I know that for a fact that that's the angle that they are pushing for, and you know, some folks have said that would help us because that would give us two more seats in the Senate in Washington D.C. But that could also lead to the opposition that could tip the balance of power. So I know that what has been proposed is entering into new statehood or joining Puerto Rico, which is already voted to become a state. And mm-hmm. So now that's kind of hanging in limbo. So if Liberty State came along, you'd have two new senators from a blue state and two new senators from a red state, which would balance out the power.
Right.
So, when you hear the arguments against, oh, it'll never happen. And this is what we're up against right now, because I've been very much involved with this, with the committee to support and advance the Liberty State. And that is overwhelmingly the response is that would be so amazing. I would love to see that happen, but it'll never happen. And so they're defeated before they can even get off. This is an education process. It's right. It's a hard hurdle to get over.
They've already defeated themselves mentally. My late father-in-law was fond of saying, name your limitations and they are yours. And that's the mentality of, unfortunately, a lot of rhino politicians in Washington State.
Yes.
If they instead looked at this as a positive and as a crusade, a campaign, it could be accomplished in less than a year.
Well, I think a lot of it is the faith, the people's faith in their leaders to take this baton and run with it. And this is another education process as well. I was speaking with the a county commissioner candidate, Renee Holiday, up in Stevens County, which is easily, arguably, the most qualified candidate for Stevens County right now. And mm-hmm. She was part of the committee that presented the county commissioners earlier this spring with a resolution to break away from Western Washington. This was very well received, but there's several that are, I guess, the rhinos, those in the establishment rather of the Republican Party over there, that are kind of looking down their noses at Liberty State like it's some type of childish, fanciful thing. And Renee Holiday reminded just a couple of days ago, said, you realize that 75% of your constituents in these recent polls are showing they support this, and their eyes get wide. They're like, they do? Yes, your constituents are supporting this. So it's starting to change their tune. They're starting to take this more seriously. Now, if we get enough of the leadership to take it seriously, that this isn't just some fanciful pie in the sky type of concept.
Yeah, it's not just a Gedenken. It's a real thing.
Yes, it is.
At this point, I think what's really needed is resolutions to be passed by every county board of supervisors in every county east of the Cascades.
Absolutely.
And that could be done in the form of what's commonly called model legislation, where a boilerplate resolution is drafted and circulated to county commissioners. It's actively campaigned. And once it's in the hands of those commissioners, that they poll their constituents and find out if they're in favor of it. And if they are, if enough of these counties pass that resolution, and then that stack of resolutions is forwarded to the folks in Olympia, then it could happen. It could very well happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Or at least it would force it to a vote, because I know Representative Matt Shea has been presenting a bill each session for the last at least two, maybe three And it won't even get out of committee. It doesn't even get a hearing. So this would force them to at least take it seriously and right. confront it.
And I think it really should be not a top-down issue. It should be a bottom-up groundswell.
Yes.
Movement. And I think the county board of commissioners is the place to start in every county.
I think you're right. Well, and that is actually happening. That resolution, that boilerplate resolution, is available at libertystate.org. And as these presentations are made in each county, they're forming county Liberty State committees that are creating that groundswell and approaching their county commissioners, the board of commissioners, and presenting this resolution. And I was there personally to see the one in Stevens County presented, and the language that is in it is almost like reading the Declaration of Independence. It lists the grievances and the reasons, the impetus for doing this. And I know that the discussions were that we need to kind of soften the language so it doesn't come across too strong, too divisive, too radical, right? So mm-hmm. when it was presented to the commissioners, they were saying they would love to sign it, but the language isn't strong enough. And they started listing things that the state has been doing that's frustrated them to no end. So, the passion there is, I mean, it's there. When you tap into it, they're very passionate about the subject, the wrongs that they are confronted with from the west side of the state. So I don't think it'll take any I think it will take very little effort to really stoke that fire in the hearts and the minds of the people on the side of the Cascades, for sure.
Yeah, and I think that one of the primary driving forces, the real impetus for this, is going to come within the next 2 years over firearms ownership. As the folks west of the Cascades push too far in destroying our Second Amendment rights, there is going to be so much revulsion and righteous indignation on the part of the folks east of the Cascades that this will definitely come to a head.
Yes.
And if you know, we have 50 independent states in this country. And that is both a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see this indirectly as both over the gun issue, because I think the folks in Oregon and Washington are going to be pushed too far by these leftist politicians on the left coast.
Yeah. And I think also the advancement of this Agenda 21 and smart growth, basically the land ownership or the private property rights and water rights could also be thrown into that mix as well. We've seen, I mean, the last two real significant actions by the Patriot within the Patriot community, the last several have been over mining, the BLM, you know, encroachment, right. ranching. Those land property rights and water rights issues were what actually brought us almost to the next civil war here just a few years ago. But I think the firearms ownership, Washington State, that item right there is going to be what's going to push everything, tip everything over the edge, especially for rural eastern Washington, which is really big on their water rights, their land ownership, and the firearms ownership. So those three things right there is probably going to be the spark. I'm talking politically, to get enough people motivated to break away from Western Washington.
Right.
So right. It's very exciting to be a part of and to observe. And these are really great suggestions and insights from you as well. I know that you are very acute when it comes to, you know, the intelligence process, the dynamics or the effects, the psychological effects and impacts, societal impacts and so on. So,
I try to take the 30,000 foot view of all of this.
Yes.
And, my training as an intelligence officer, you know, leads me to essentially confirm my assumptions. Because if you look at the history of the 20th century and of people groups that find themselves at odds with a central government, it becomes almost inevitable that there are going to be separatist tendencies. And thankfully, we have the precedent of West Virginia splitting off from Virginia. So it's not unprecedented. It is, and I want to make it absolutely clear to anyone listening to this, that we are not seeking civil war. We are not seeking another Confederacy or anything of the sort. All we're seeking is the lawful, constitutionally allowable, and with precedent partition of two states to become, or one state to become two, with two separate state capitals, two legislatures, separate economies, and the equal footing of a new state.
Yes.
And the advantages far outweigh the disadvantages. And in terms of representation alone, it's an advantageous to states to do this. Not only are you going to have two new state senators, you're also probably going to end up with one additional congressman because of the minimum number of congressmen representing a state. You know,
right.
In Idaho, for example, if Idaho were to split, they would have one more congressman, ipso facto.
Sure, sure. We're going to continue pushing for this because we believe that this is the solution. As somebody stated in response to a claim that it would be too difficult to form a new state, and the response was it would be easier to form a new state than to fix Washington State from Olympia, on the western side of the state. So yeah, I agree with that. It would definitely be easier. So we're going to push. We're going to pour everything into it. We've pledged our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to that end. And I know that the people that are on board are extremely excited about it, very passionate about it, and that's becoming contagious. So we'll see.
And I do think that this will, in effect, become a viral movement.
Yes.
And I think a lot of the organizing is going to be done at the grassroots through the internet. And other than that, the main driving force is going to be all the way down to the level of conversations of individual farmers and ranchers and businessmen sitting down and having lunch or dinner with the members of their county board of supervisors, the county commissioners. It's that simple.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of when the watershed moment arrives.
Exactly. So we're trying to build that framework now, or the foundation for that. Because you're right. When you have, it doesn't take much, a small amount of prominent people in the community approaching the commissioners, even on a personal level, which they're able to do, you know, at the trap and skeet range, you know, at the classic car show or wherever they are at the feed store, they stop Henry and they say, "Hey, Henry, we've got some concerns and we want you to support this. You know, this is in our best interest." They listen to them. They're you know, much more accessible, which makes a better government than one that's more accessible.
Right. That, in fact, it's the appropriate level of government.
Absolutely.
I'm not a big government guy at all. I guess you gather from my writings.
Yeah.
And I think the appropriate level of government and the appropriate extent of government is where the county is the fundamental building block of government. And any power that's accumulated above the county level should be looked at with great suspicion.
Yes. And that is all being taken into consideration in the discussion for forming Liberty State. This is really exciting stuff. I wish I could talk about more of it, but it's revolutionary, really. It's totally different. You mentioned earlier that what's going to be necessary is to change the paradigm. And I think this is an opportunity to be able to do that. And I'm really excited about that. But anyway, we're coming up on the end of our time, and I want to just thank you so much. James Wesley Rawls from Survival Blog, prolific author, If you have not checked them out, please do so. I know most of the people in this audience are very familiar with James Rawls and Survival Blog, and most of you cut your teeth on Patriots, the novel. So anyway, Mr. Rawls, thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for your continued support of Radio Free Redoubt.
Thank you so much, John. Thank you for your tireless efforts, and I pray the 91st Psalm for you and all your listeners.
Thank you so much. All right. God bless, and we'll talk soon.
You too.
Okay.
Shalom.
Shalom. Bye now. Hi everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Then let Glenn take you on a wild ride through the collapse, community building, resistance against a corrupt system, and the rebirth of a new one. Go to 299days.com to learn more. This is segment four, the final segment here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. I hope you appreciated that. It was really great to have him on. Segment four is brought to you by Werks Holsters, WERKZ.com. And there's another great idea, except they're custom holsters, so you're not going to get a chance to get it by Father's Day, but there's always, hey, a gift certificate, right? So Werks Holsters, custom holsters made right here in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on all their products as well. Okay, now last week we were talking about Radio for Europe and Liberty Radio and the impact that that had, the effect that it had, both positive and negative. Positive effects, of course, it brought news, it brought unfiltered information over the Iron Curtain. Very difficult to get information that was not from communist state-sponsored news agencies to the people. It informed them, it encouraged them, inspired them. It was also a great way to send information covert information over the Iron Curtain as well. But really, it was to the people. It was to give them hope. To let them know they were not alone, to let them know that people were thinking of them, that there's another world out there besides the one that the communists are trying to get their subjects to buy into. So that's one of the things that very strongly inspired Radio Free Redoubt. So we kind of go on that same kind of a theme. Well, there's a lot of positive. They had a great, tremendous positive impact on many people, but it also had a very negative impact as well. Just from the backlash from the communists, catching people being caught listening to Radio Free Europe or Radio Liberty were often arrested, interrogated, have their things confiscated. They were subject to, you know, all kinds of scrutiny. But anyway, just I want to share just a little bit more of this from you because it's just fascinating. And we'll put the highlights and resources, we'll put the link to this as well. But as communist governments took over in Eastern Europe, the U.S. government realized that these emigres represented a powerful force against their communist-controlled homelands. And it recruited them as writers, speakers, and in other capacities to facilitate the return of democratic governments, broadcasting to the Soviet Union. Okay, so remember, a lot of these people, as the Iron Curtain was going up, people were fleeing into Western Europe. So they were taking these folks from that spoke the native tongue to Poland, to Czechoslovakia. They were recruiting these guys because they were excellent, excellent sources to exploit, to their fellow countrymen into the occupied areas. So as Radio Free Europe, and remember what I'm reading to you, I'm not taking credit for this. This is not my material. This is from, the JackieWhiting.net, under the U.S. History and Radio Free Europe. So we're going to link to this, to them. I just want to read a little bit of this to hopefully just, pique your interest and whet your appetite to make you want more and actually go there and read this there on that website. But as Radio Free Europe developed a growing listener base in Czechoslovakia, Poland, Hungary, Bulgaria, and Romania, the CIA became interested in broadcasting to the Soviet Union. Now, let me stop right there. Isn't it interesting? The Czechoslovakia, Poland, and Hungary, the first three nations that are listed right there, are returning to a more a Christian-based culture. They're tearing down statues of Lenin and putting up crosses, where here in America, we're tearing down crosses, and in Seattle, they put up a statue of Lenin. Isn't this amazing? And where we're in, well, not we as in you and I, but the powers that be are advocating, strongly advocating, aggressively advocating for bringing in more and more people who have openly declared they want to overthrow our way of life. And Czechoslovakia and Poland and Hungary are securing their borders and putting up walls and fences and guarding them. So it is very interesting. But a new organization, the American Committee for the Liberation of the Peoples of Russia, that's AMCOMLIB, created Radio Liberation. That's one I had not heard of before, Radio Liberation, later renamed Radio Liberty. So I didn't know it was a Radio Liberation at first, but Radio Liberty sounds better anyway. That was definitely an improvement. But on March 1st, 1953, it initiated service by broadcasting 67 hours a week. It was no sooner on the air than it was presented with one of the biggest news stories of the decade, the death of Stalin, on March 5th. In contrast to Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty maintained a low profile without the fanfare, promotion, and fundraising with celebrity chairman. This is why many Americans today have never heard of Radio Liberty. One important programming resource, particularly for Radio Liberty, was Samizdat, self-published literature considered seditious by the Soviet government and other communist regimes. Now, the communists, they definitely did respond. I won't read this whole thing to you, but they carried bombings and assassinations against the radio personalities and so on. So that's why many of the radio personalities use aliases and, stage names or microphone names, aliases, code names. The communist governments responded to the unwelcome radios by jamming their signals, broadcasting shrieks, howls, white noise, or other electronic sounds on the same frequencies so that it was difficult or impossible to hear the program from Radio Free Europe or Radio Liberty. Jamming was done by the Soviet Union continually from within the first 10 minutes of programming in 1953 through most of 1988. The five RFE target countries all jammed at various times during the Cold War. In addition, the communist governments, viewing the emigre employees as traitors to their homelands, threatened employees and their families still living behind the Iron Curtain and carried out assassinations and bombings. Spies infiltrated the radios, some occupying key positions. Now, obviously, they're not jamming us today, but what we do see is conservative podcasts and websites undergoing something a little bit different type of jamming, and that is our internet attacks. So the denial of service attacks. They bombard you with all of these hits on your website, so it overloads it and shuts it down so others can't get on your website. So there's just kind of modern version of this. The modern version of the cat and mouse still continues. So that's something kind of interesting there. Before I get into the next part, we'll start talking about radio operators, agent radio operations during World War II. This predates Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. But first, I want to remind you, T-Rex 2018 is coming up. Okay, that's that 3-day weekend, July 20th, 21st, and 22nd, Friday through Sunday. And I'm way behind schedule on this because I've had several things, as some of you guys know, many of you know. I've really been sidelined, just derailed, had the legs cut right out from under me, dealing with some things that are not over yet, but I am finally at the point where I can get my head wrapped around a couple of critical tasks that are way behind schedule. So for that, I apologize. But the version, what we're talking about, the version 4 of the SOI, what I'm doing, I had to take, because I was diverted, we're going to take the information that I was going to put in version 4, and we're going to add that as a supplemental. So if you got version 3, that's fine. It's still going to work. This information was just going to go into as a supplemental or as an addendum to version 4. So what we're going to call this is version 3.1, the supplemental. So you can add it to version 3. And when version 4 does come out, it won't change. Everything will still be functional if you only have version 3 with the supplemental. That'll still be fine. Version 4 is just going to have the supplemental integrated into it. Into the new SOI, but that's going to come after T-Rex. And again, I apologize, but this is just something that was beyond my control, to be able to do as good of a job as I wanted to. So we want to still get the information to you in time for T-Rex, which is, you know, we're looking, a month and a half out still. So you got plenty of time. And by the end of this week, I will have the supplemental all uploaded and ready to go for you guys to download and print out and add to your version 3 SOIs. So essentially, you're going to have in your hands a version 4 SOI. Okay, so now let's move on. Agent radio operation during World War II. Now, this was approved for release by the CIA Historical Review Program in 93. But it's the first time that I had seen this. I'm always scouring, looking for stuff like this, a secret agent, radio operator, you know, resistance radio, World War II stuff. So this is just right down my alley. I love this kind of stuff. I know a lot of you guys do too. Okay, so during World War II, I'm only going to read part of this to you, and then I want you to go and read the rest of it for yourself if this is something that's interesting to you. I know. Most of you in this listening audience, you kind of like this stuff. During World War II, the use of clandestine radio for agent communications was widespread. Literally, hundreds of agent circuits were operated during the war. On the enemy side, they ranged in type from highly organized nets involving German diplomatic installations to single operations in such widely scattered places as Mozambique and isolated locations in the United States. On the Allied side, there was no part of Axis territory where we did not have clandestine communication representatives, or JOES, as they were called. It was almost impossible to tune a communications receiver of an evening without running across signals which were so obviously not what they were trying to seem that you wondered why they were not wrapped up the first time they came on the air. Four types of agent radio operators can be distinguished. Those who operated in metropolitan areas in concert with well-organized watcher organizations. Those who operated on their own in cities. Those who were with the guerrilla groups. And those who worked alone in isolated rural areas. Now, a lot of you, you go out there with your remote communications gear and you try to make those QRP, those low-power contacts. And especially SOTA, Summits on the Air, is a great way to practice this. You have your backpack portable equipment, you set up your radio, you make contact, you break it all down, and you move. And that's a lot of fun. So you can kind of just imagine what it might be for some of these clandestine radio operators during World War II. So this just makes the hobby, a fun and rewarding hobby, just that much more fun. And who knows? how all of this could come back around in the future. The other type is the city mouse. In cities, a variety of techniques was employed to protect the operator. In one case, as many as five operators in widely separated areas were geared to function as one station. All had transmitters on the same frequency and copies of the traffic for a given schedule. If the enemy approached the vicinity of a particular operator, he would stop transmitting when signaled by his watcher, and at the same time, another operator in a remote part of the city, who had been listening to his colleague, would, with hardly a perceptible pause, continue the transmission. As necessary, a third would take over from the second, and so on, much to the frustration of the opposition. In another instance, long abandoned telephone lines were used to key distant transmitters, whose remoteness from the operator greatly increased his security. Remote operations, we actually have that today. You can remotely operate your radio using the internet now. So with some virtual private networks and some other tradecraft thrown in there, you could still apply the same principle today using the internet instead of old telephone lines. Or you might be able to actually incorporate old telephone lines into this as well. Think outside the box, right? So these and other sophisticated devices were employed successfully in target areas where an extensive and highly organized underground was able to create the conditions for them. So the country mouse, the radio operator with the guerrilla group, came in for his share of difficulties too. First of all, he usually arrived at his destination by parachute. Often, his equipment was damaged in the drop. Many times, he had to lug it over almost impassable terrain in a wide scramble to protect it and avoid capture. Sometimes, he never got on the air at all, and he and his teammates would be the subject of melancholy speculation on the part of his comrades at headquarters until some word trickled back as to what had happened to them. So there's more to this. This is just a lot. It's a very interesting article to read. We're going to post that in the highlights and resources posting. We might post that as a partial posting over at amron.com as well. So anyway, guys, I'm going to wrap that up. I'm going to leave you with one last thing. You know the old propaganda posters about security and OPSEC and the enemies listening and security's first? Well, a bunch of these got declassified and are now available. They're 1950s and 1960s era PDFs and 1970s as well as a couple I saw in there during the Cold War. So those are a lot of fun too. The governmentattic.org. 28 docs, NSA security posters. So those are fun. Little throwback there. Probably even something you could print out and hang up on your own wall in your shack for a little bit of throwback. So anyway, you guys have a blessed week this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for your letters of encouragement. Thank you for your prayers of support. We also appreciate your financial support as it is greatly, greatly needed now more than ever. So thank you guys very much for all of that. So with that, you've been listening to the Voice of the American Redoubt. I'm John Jacob Schmidt. And if you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, my name is your name too. Good night.